became a member in 1988. Everyone's invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through the doors behind me. If you're a newcomer this morning, we extend you a special welcome. And if you'll fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your hymnal and put it in the offering plate or give it to an usher, we'll send you a copy of our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at church. If you have children with you, they are invited to attend our religious education program during the service when children leave for classes later in this service. We do have a professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children. If you would like to learn more about this church and about Unitarian Universalism, there's an information rack in our fellowship hall where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you're certainly welcome to take home with you. Of course, we encourage you to speak with the members and to learn more and encourage current members. We urge you to seek out visitors and share with them this beloved community. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. If you have a short announcement for the good of the church, please come to the microphone at this time.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm a little hoarse today, so forgive me if I sound a little froggy. This is our first day of religious education this year. Woohoo! So what that means, we have four classrooms running this year. We have a nursery, we have the Spirit Play classroom for pre-K kids through kindergarten. We have the first through fifth grade classroom that's doing a Nature Sunday this week. And we have the youth group that's just doing a sort of a social this week before we start the regular rotation. If you haven't registered, like this year, come and see me if you haven't registered your kids, because I'm taking new registrations this year and I've got those forms. They're also in the classrooms if you need them. And on the 28th, it's going to be a social service Sunday, and we're collecting either personal care items or donations in order to buy those for Riverbend Reentry Program, helping people who are coming out of the prison system. So again, see me if you want to contribute to that. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tracy Howe Koch, also on the 28th with the, I suppose it fits with the social justice thing. I don't know if you remember me talking last spring and then a few weeks ago about the UUSC, the UU Social Action Committee, and they're doing rebuilding efforts in Haiti, and part of the rebuilding efforts is helping Native Haitians plant their own gardens so that they can be use their money elsewhere instead of having to spend it all on food. They're not as lucky as we are to have free public education, things of that sort. So right now, they're doing a 100 Gardens initiative, and on the 28th, I invite you all, actually, to bring food from your gardens or food from a farmer's market or anywhere within 100 miles, and we're going to share it at the in-between services that day, and then we'll be taking up any sort of collection or donation you want to towards these gardens. We, as a church community, have pledged $250, so it would be great to raise that amount of money. And the $250 provides a garden for a family in Haiti. And I know we all have things in our cupboards, more zucchinis, things of that nature. Feel free to make bread with them. I don't know how many people want a plain zucchini, but hey, you can bring that too. It's not really a sale, it's just a donation. Everybody's welcome to partake of the food. So anyway, please remember that, and I'll remind you again next week.
Hi, I'm Robin Berkeley, co-chair of Food Ministries, and it is that time yet again. On the 27th, we'll be feeding people here. So we'll be posting a list as soon as possible about what we need for donations, either for food or for personal care, correct? Sabrina, we need personal care still? Always, yes, absolutely always. In fact, I actually was at Aldi's yesterday and they had bleach on sale for like $1.29 or something like that. So grab a bunch of bleach, they need that. Oh, even better, 10 for 10 at Snooks. So, the second thing was, I'm still waiting to hear back from First Pres. We are lending our space next Saturday because First Presbyterian cannot manage to host the food for next Saturday. I know a lot of the women are planning to be at the event, PEGS event. Mm-hmm. The Wild Women. But I know that Sabrina has volunteered and a few other people have volunteered to help, but I'm still trying to get the exact time frame of when we need somebody here. I'm not asking you to cook, I'm not asking you to clean or what have you, but mostly just be here to show them, you know, where things are. So hopefully the time frame will work for Sabrina, but if it doesn't, I need somebody who's willing to step up to help. So if you can let me know, I would appreciate that.
And I have a few announcements for the good of the order. First, I want to mention that Mary and Jerry Johnson are at Emerson Church today. That congregation is celebrating its 30th anniversary, and they moved, literally sold their building in the beginning of the summer and moved, and they're in their new space and they're blessing it today. And so Mary and Jerry are there offering good words of welcome from this congregation. So I want to let you know that's happening. Yahoo, exactly right. Second, I want to mention that the Board of Trustees, if you're on the Board of Trustees, would you stand up? Board of Trustees, there they are. Yay! Yes, exactly right. There's a certain amount of bravery it takes to be on the Board of Trustees of any church. Yesterday, we had a wonderful startup conversation with Jordy, who's a member at Elliott and was representing the region and helping us get the interim period started. So I encourage you, if you have any questions about the interim, speak to your board or speak to the transitions team or any of the transitions team members here, Marsha or Sarah or Sarah. There's Marsha. Okay. And you can talk to them also if you have questions about the interim time. Finally, I want to say that on September 28th, this is going to be a busy day apparently, we will be having a training on youth leadership and youth development. If you are the parent of a teen or about to be the parent of a teen, you're interested in teaching or mentoring with teenage youth, or you just want to learn more about it, or just witness me teaching, I highly encourage you to attend that. It should be a lot of fun. That's an area of expertise for me, and one of my heart places is in youth ministry and youth leadership. So I encourage you to attend that. And that's all.
When I started coming here in the late 80s, one of the things that was a great event that many of the women did here is go to the women's weekends that they had in Michigan at in Waterfleet, Michigan, at a place called Camp Renora and various sites. And they had, through Women in Religion and various organizations through the UUA, they had these women's weekends and retreats. And I always, one of my goals was always to have one here. And so, yeah, next weekend will be our second Wild Succulent Women of the Wood gathering at Camp Torqua, which is just right outside Edwardsville. And we were trying to keep it at 50, but it kind of has been hard to do. I think if it's a nice day, which I'm projecting and just witching up that it will be, that that we'll have about 65 people there, actually, women drifting in and out for a variety of really outstanding workshops and gatherings and rituals, and it's just going to, it's blown also into a weekend. So it's taken on a life of its own. And I'm very grateful and honored to be, that started here and sort of open to the whole community. I'm very grateful to have had the experience to facilitate that. I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitude or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. There will be a time for to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Tempe. A lot of you already know about our family and the challenges that we have faced with one of my sons, and I've debated on whether or not to share this because I feel like maybe it's a little personal and people might not appreciate it, but
Alex has been potty trained for 2 entire weeks. And that is the most joyous thing that has happened to me in many months, so thank you.
Hi. Little backstory, I'm an only child. I have a cousin that is 7 days younger than me. And he just came out of his family as a trans man after years of not being able to. And this is way too personal, but I'm so happy to be able to share it here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mona Hebert. I have a thankfulness, a joy, if you want to call it, and a milestone. One, today's my birthday. I'm hitting one of the big ones. I'm not going to tell you which big one, but I've hit it. I've got one of the big ones. Okay? Thank you. Appreciate it. And I'm especially thankful this year because about 2 months ago, the early part of July, I found out I had a really serious health issue that I was not aware of, that was extremely serious. But I found the right doctor who got me on the right treatment, and hopefully we've got everything under control, and I'm technically cured. So. And hopefully everything will continue that way, but for a while there, I wasn't sure if I was going to make it to the big one. But I made it to the big one, and my health is back in good shape, so I'm very thankful.
A couple weeks ago, I asked all of you to send some good juju to Margaret. She was auditioning for some orchestras, and she made the higher-level orchestra, so I was really proud of her. Also, yesterday she auditioned for a very elite preparatory music program at Webster University, and just keep all your fingers and toes crossed. We should know on the 22nd, and so I'll either be dancing or helping her to make it through. Thank you.
I'm Honor Dimmick, and yesterday I ran a race, 5K, and I broke 20.
A couple of things. I forgot to say anything last week about it, but a couple weeks ago, we went up north to visit our children and grandchildren up there, but on the way, we stopped in the Chicago area to see the Tay family and spend the night with them, and we really had a fun time, and apparently, we weren't the only ones. They said this is the 8th visit that they've had. They told everybody to come and visit, so we did. So I think they enjoyed it, and they were learning to sail right now, living up there by Lake Michigan. They're taking sailing lessons and having a wonderful time. The other thing I wanted to share today, and you can figure out my age by this, last night celebrated my 50th high school reunion with the class of Granite City 1964. We had a wonderful large meeting. There were 600 of us in our class, so even the small number of us being there made a big gathering. So it was wonderful to be able to still be able to make it to your 50th reunion. Hopefully we'll go on longer than that.
So this is actually an announcement cloaked in a joy. The announcement is that if you weren't here last week, you probably didn't hear that we have what we're calling the spirit chair over there. It's filled with coloring pages and crayons and little fiddly toys, and we'll put different things out each couple weeks. And it's just if you are a grown-up or a child and you'd like something to keep your hands busy, you're welcome to go and visit. My joy is that I see people visiting the spirit chair. This is good news.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning.
Hi, I'm Claudia. In the past 2 weeks, my daughter-in-law's stepfather found out, rather surprisingly, he has cancer. They first discovered it in his brain. Further tests showed he has also in one lung and a couple of tumors along his spine. At this point, they are giving him an outlook of 6 months to a year. And they're still reeling from this. He was not showing any signs of being ill, just feeling a little tired. And so it's been a shock, and everybody is still trying to deal with the news. And now they're looking at what kind of treatments to start. So if you could please keep him in your thoughts, prayers, send out blessings, whatever is your method for good intentions. Thank you.
So this is actually kind of trivial by comparison, but our washer leaked, and it leaked several times, and it got worse and worse, and we didn't know it, and it leaked under the floorboards, so we're gonna have to replace most of the flooring for our kitchen and laundry room area. It's just one darn thing after another with our house, and I wish we were renting. But home insurance will actually cover part of this. So that's good. Thanks.
My great-grandpa died, and it's very sad. It's hard to forget him now.
May the gratitudes and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all, and may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts, a burden shared, become a load lightened. The prelude begins our worship service as Garrett lights our chalice. Spirit of life, be present with us this hour. Join us today as we gather in a wider search for truth and purpose. In this quest, may we greet one another with open hearts and minds. May we inspire each other to consider new questions and seek deeper meaning. And may we cultivate wisdom and compassion. Let all who enter this sanctuary see a welcome face, hear a kind word, and find comfort in this community. And may all that is done and said here today be in service to love and justice. I'm glad to be part of this church and glad to be part of a world where there's so much to explore. I promise to help the people at church to learn together. I ask the children and youth. We're not there yet. Okay.
Is this the one that was the revised one? That's why I picked it up.
Oh, it's two-sided.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh, we're in a hymn. Surprise. Okay.
Performance art. Yeah, please. Please join me in hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us. Thank you.
pretty safe to assume that if we're singing a hymn, you can rise. Just trust that that will be the case. I will tell you ever if it's not. This week begins our church year in many, many ways. Two services, religious education begins. Excitement, a little uncertainty, all of the things that come with the beginning of a year. In religious education, it is the work of all people. Whether you are a teacher in the program, whether you are an adult who shows up on Sunday, whether you are a child or a youth, whether you are a parent, whether you have no relationship to any children whatsoever, you are an important part of the religious education program. It takes a village to raise a child and an adult, for that matter. We all need a little raising now and then. And so today we're going to join in reciting a covenant of commitment to the religious education program, to the children, youth, and adults who participate in that program. And so Peg will lead us in those words.
Now it makes more sense. We come together as a living church. We come together from different places as unique individuals. Our paths and the way of our going are diverse, yet we share our journey. We come together in gladness, knowing that here we are welcome as we are, and that here also the best possibilities of our spirits are encouraged to grow. We take responsibility for encouraging one another in our spiritual growth. Children and youth, please repeat after me. I'm glad to be a part of this church. And glad to be part of a world where there is so much to explore.
And glad to be a part of a world where there is so much to explore.
I promise to help the people at church to learn together.
I promise to help people at church to learn together.
Glad to have the opportunity to work and play and learn with the youngest people in our church. Your questions invite my wonder. Your trust encourages my hope. So I will strive to give each of you the kind of affection and respect which fosters your ability to question and to trust. I take responsibility for encouraging and supporting. We all rejoice in the children and youth who are with us on life's journey. As we cherish you, we pledge ourselves to share with you the living wisdom of our religious tradition, which is your heritage. We welcome you into our community. As you grow, we hope to find you beside us in the long and loving work of creating goodness in the world. As members of a church family, we promise to stick together, to support each other, as all good families do, through thick and thin, through joy and sorrow, through tears and laughter, through work and play, and all the choices and challenges life's journey begins. As children of one creative spirit, we affirm our relationship to the larger family of life. We affirm our faith that we have within us the power and wisdom to join in the creation of a world of justice, peace, and joy. Let us strive to understand ourselves and one another and to extend the spirit of goodwill as far as our love can reach.
going to invite the ushers to ignore the order of service for a minute. We'll be doing the offering a little bit later. First, I want to invite everyone to listen to a story. Who likes stories? Who likes stories with animals? Who likes stories with plants? Who likes stories that include celery? Who likes stories in which the monarchy says, "I won't lead anymore"? I know there's some adults here for that, I would hope, yeah. So once there were two rulers of a forest. They were queen bears, and they loved their community and one another so very, very much. Queen Isabella would wander through the rivers and trees, share advice with all the plants and the insects and all the animals. She loved to teach, and she loved to learn. Queen Valesia loved to sing and dance with all of the beings of the forest. When a creature broke the laws of the land, the queens did what had always been done, and they intervened, and they made a ruling, and frequently they forced the creatures to leave the land, the only rule that existed, and the only power that they had ever known. After a time, they decided that they would trust the creatures of their country to decide for themselves how to live. They felt bad about passing these rulings and always being the arbiters of how things would be, the ones saying, "You will do this no matter what." They wanted nothing of it. How many of you have felt that way? You didn't want any part of the rules? Just get me out of here. I don't want to make the decisions. I hear you. I'm sure the board feels that way sometimes. I'm sure parents feel that way sometimes. Anybody got to make decisions. So the queens, Isabella and Valesia, decided to call the country together for a final trial. The creatures of the land were all kind of shocked. This had never happened before. And they realized that their queen beloved bears were putting them own selves on trial. Imagine President Obama or President Bush going and saying, "I'm going to put myself on trial for something I've done." Wouldn't happen, right? Right. They bequeathed themselves guilty of being too hard-handed and just listening to the rules as they had always been, and decided to banish themselves from the forest. The creatures were confused. The willows wept, the bees stopped buzzing, the cats cried, the spider stopped weaving, and all the creatures were left mourning the loss of their queens, who had followed the rules as it had always been and banished themselves from their own lands. Eventually, they kind of went back to their everyday lives, doing the same things they had always done. We tend to do that, right? When you don't know what's going on, you just do what you always knew. Until one day, there was this great conflict in the forest. You see, the beavers needed a new tree for their dam, and so they decided to just cut down Edgar the evergreen. Didn't ask Edgar's permission. Just chopped him right down. Now, Edgar the evergreen was home to squirrels and to birds and to beetles and to all kinds of living things. And so they lost their homes all at once. You can imagine a tree kind of landing on your house and suddenly you don't have a place to live anymore. This is what happened to them. Everyone was angry and nobody knew how to speak to each other. They had always relied on the queens to resolve these kinds of problems, and they were nowhere to be found. And so they said mean and awful things. Have you ever done that when you're unsure and really upset and you just say mean and awful things that you know you don't really mean, but you just don't know what to do with it? That's where they were. The creatures, after much fighting and destruction, decided it was time to have a meeting, to do something about this. And at first, they were calm. But then Giselle Gazelle bemoaned about how these kinds of things never happened when the queens were here. And Tipper the Tortoise reminded everyone what the queens had said, that selfishness and abuse of power were things that they had done and that they shouldn't do it again. Scanlan Celery started complaining that the rabbits were eating more celery than they needed. And Berta Bass complained that the breaking of the dam had washed her entire family out to sea. And they were struggling to find their way back home. And after a while, people began to complain and complain and complain all at the same time. You experienced that before? Everybody's yelling all at once? I want you to pick one thing in your life right now that you would like to complain about. Think of it. Has everybody got one thing you'd like to complain about? Say it all at once. Ready? One, two, three. I want more sleep. Okay. And of course, the result is, unless you have the microphone, I have the power, right? You didn't really hear anybody or everybody. You just kind of heard who's near you. That's how it was. Until finally, Sandy the spider convinced Leroy the lion to roar. Can anybody roar for me? Oh, what lion roars like that? Let's try that again, right? Let's hear a roar. Ah, there we go. That's a roar. And he roared, and finally everyone was listening. And Sandy said, our queens warned us that things would be hard without them. They encouraged us to find a way together without a leader, and I think we should work together to create a covenant so that we can live together. For example, we might agree that we will share our needs with one another rather than just taking what we need. Right? Perhaps the trees will know exactly which one is best serve the needs of all of us, and they can decide which tree to cut down for the beaver dam and who doesn't really live there, or give people time to move away. We can elect a council to help create this covenant, and we can even offer our ideas so that everybody feels included. Miguel the mouse, can anybody make a mouse noise for me? Yeah. Is it talking like this? I'm not going to do that, though. I suggest that we have a team of creatures. I need to be able to preach later. I suggest that we have a team of creatures who will help in times of conflict and decide how to work things out when we do not follow our covenant. So it wouldn't be queens anymore. It'd be a team of people who would help us. Now, this community did not live happily ever after. They never do. But they did live well as a community of creatures together, and they had many, many more conflicts, many more fights, and times when they didn't hear each other. But things started to work out. The beavers apologized to Elter the Evergreen, Aurelia Squirrel, and Bucky Beetle, and Calpurnia Cardinal, who all had lived there, apologized to the beaver for destroying their dam. They helped rebuild the dam along with many other creatures in that region. The beavers helped everybody find a new home that had been displaced. The rabbits agreed to only eat the celery they needed and to help plant new celery next year. And the Bass family never really returned. Having been washed to sea, they never really felt quite welcome again. That happens sometimes. Creatures from other places, however, heard of this new covenant and were excited about the community and decided to come and live there. Now, this covenant, and I think the kids know about covenants, right? You do these in your classes. You make a covenant. You're going to agree to listen to each other and be kind and all of that. And the adults do sometimes. Some of you know these as well. And their covenant had some basic rules. But the most important one was inspired by the plants and stones. And what they said was, treat others as you would have, they would have you treat them. The golden rule says, treat others as they would have you treat, you would have them treat you. This one was saying, it doesn't matter what I think. We're going to treat people how they want to be treated, right? Does that make sense? And so after many years, the bears returned to the country, asked them to be called quite simply Isabella and Valesia, no longer queens. Isabella taught in the school, and Valesia opened her own dance studio. The creatures went to the plant and rock garden every year to celebrate the creation of their covenant. They sang and they danced to the words, treat others as they would have you treat them. And everyone lived messy and beautiful lives to the end of their days. May it be so. You're going to notice as we sing our children and youth to their classes, a change in the words you normally sing. Go Now in Peace is a song that's written by somebody in particular who's been very angry that Unitarian Universalists changed the words that she wrote. So we're going to sing the words that she wrote, and if we decide we don't like them, because it does use the word God, we'll use different words in the future. But for now, we're going to respect the artist and sing the song as she would like us to sing it. Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the Lord. Go now in peace, may the love of God. Yeah, I'll sing that one a little differently than I know. Nobody got burnt to the ground singing God? We're all good? Okay. This morning's offering words are in English and Spanish. If you don't know Spanish, that's okay. You don't need to know it because it's in the English. Somos una gente del arco iris. We are the rainbow people. The rainbow is an arc of light brilliantly displaying all the colors of the visible spectrum, all the colors that combine to make the astounding beauty of our world, all the colors that combine to reflect the astounding diversity of human expression. Nous sommes des peuples des dark en ciel. We are the red people who respect others. We are the orange people who offer faith and kind treatment. We are yellow people yearning for learning. Somos una gente del arco iris. We are green people who grow and search for our truth and meaning. We are the blue people who believe in what we are achieving. We are indigo people insisting on freedom, love, and peace. We are violet people valuing the web that does not cease and we did not create. Nous sommes des peuples des dark en ciel. Unitarian Universalism shows up refracted through thousands of different human expressions and experiences, through individuals living our promises, through covenanted communities, through our associations. We are rainbow people. Together, what we have heals and transforms our world. This is our covenant, our bridge of heaven, our dream and our reality. The flame of the chalice lit around the world is the source of light and the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. The flame of that chalice is filled with the light we bring and nurtured by our hopes and dreams. We know the rainbow begins with you and me. For somos una gente del arco iris, nous sommes des peuples des dark en ciel. We are a rainbow people. Let us grow that rainbow again today through our gifts of heart, hands, and resources. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given. I invite you to join in reciting the offertory blessing printed on the wall. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings. This morning's reading comes from the introduction to the Cambridge Platform by Alice Blair Wesley. And I should mention, each week I will bring the books that I use to inform the sermon and the worship service, and they will be up here. So if you have a question about something I've quoted or you want to see it, it will always be here for you. If you choose to borrow a book, just let me know. This is from Alice Blair Wesley. But if one does not speak of the covenant that constitutes the community as a church, the promise that all are cordially invited to enter, then what does one say is the basis of a liberal church? Long experience teaches us that it cannot be a creed. I hope the day comes when many can explain, ours is a covenantal church. We join by promising one another that we will be a beloved community, meeting together often to find the ways of love as best we can see to do. We have found there is always more to learn about how love really works and could work in our lives and in the world. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 1023, Building Bridges. Do folks know this hymn? No? Okay, I'll leave my microphone on then. Sing it twice through.
Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you, will you reach out to me? With all of our voices and all of our visions, friends, we could make such sweet harmony. Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you, will you reach out to me? With all of our voices and all of our visions, friends, we could make such sweet harmony.
How y'all doing today? How y'all doing today? And some of you are like, I'm not great. Can you just leave me alone? My introvert's like, really? You'll notice I like audience participation, and so this sermon includes a couple of points where I'll need your input, so I invite you to be ready for that moment when it comes. So in July, one of our sibling congregations at the First Unitarian Universalist Church in New Orleans experienced a protest during a pastoral prayer by an organization called Operation Save America. Operation Save America had descended on the New Orleans area for a week to engage an intense effort to close abortion clinics within the city. On this particular Sunday morning, Reverend Deanna Vandiver was in the middle of leading the congregation in a prayer meditation, kind of quiet and peaceful time, when members of the OSA stood up and began exhorting their opinions about abortion, offering materials that depicted very clear images of aborted fetuses, thrusting them in the hands of the group of high schoolers visiting from out of state that day. Meanwhile, outside of the building, other protesters were holding up posters of aborted fetuses against the windows of the religious education classrooms where the children were gathered for their classes. Let me ask you this question. What would you personally have done in this situation? And what would we do here if this were to occur during one of our worship services? What the congregation in New Orleans did was dig deep into their religious values and respond with compassion, patience, and boundaries. They strive for a relationship where the theological difference was a barrier. But what is most interesting is that while this was a traumatic event for many, relationship won the day. They stayed in relationship with the protesters who showed up in their pews. The minister invited the OSA protesters to stay in the sanctuary or to leave. If they chose to stay, they needed to stay quietly. Some acknowledged that they could not stay quietly, so they agreed to leave the room. And about five others agreed to stay silently and be in the service. It had just happened that there was a group of high school age youth from the College of Social Justice participating in a justice and leadership training, and they were in the congregation that day and found they had an immediate use for the skills they had learned that week. They sang hymns about the love during the loudest part of the protest of the people there gathered, and the congregation modeled with them, disagreeing compassionately and respectfully. Even as they might be yelled at, they responded with presence and with listening ears. At the same time, they did not accept this behavior as welcome in their community. The thing about relationship is that it requires communication and listening. Many of the protesters had not come to listen. They had come to share their creed, but not to be present to relationship. Those who could not comply, of course, were asked to leave the space. Children in the building were moved to an inner classroom where there were no windows. And with the support of the police, who were able to show up thanks to a second minister who just happened to be in the audience that day, they moved the protesters off of the property onto the sidewalk where they continued their protest. After worship was over, Reverend Vandiver called the local Planned Parenthood, which they had a relationship, and Planned Parenthood sent the volunteers who often walk women safely into clinics to the church to help our members safely leave their church. That week, the congregation worked with area organizations to send a message of love and community that was counter to the OSA protests in New Orleans. All in all, given the situation, I would say the congregation handled things pretty darn well. Would you? Can you imagine that happening here? I can imagine it happening here. Can you imagine responding to it that well? I'm not sure if I could do it. It would take a lot of our presence and a lot of our patience. This is not to say that it was easy. And certainly the minister and the congregation's training and skill played a part. As a covenantal faith, we have long since had a focus on relationship over and above theology. Theology has been important from our formation, but we have long been more about deeds than creeds, even going back to our Puritan days in the 1600s. The reading this morning from a modern reflection on a historical document called the Cambridge Platform, that document set forth our polity, how we would be as a denomination, our way of organizing. How churches choose to organize says a lot about what they believe as a religious community. In our case, this document was written in response to another platform written in England. That platform dictated that all churches were set up under the governance of England and the monarchy, and formalized a hierarchy of sorts in which people could come in top down and tell congregations what to do. The Cambridge platform, on the other hand, stated clearly what the Puritans had long believed, that churches are the responsibility of the people in the pews, the community there gathered. Emphasis was placed on personal responsibility to your church community and the importance of lay leaders to the everyday implementation of church life. At that time, ministers were expected to study and to preach, and that was it. Can you imagine that? I can't. Just to study and to preach. And frequently would preach as often as 20 times a week. I also can't imagine that. Lay leaders handled everything else. These communities believed that they were creating heavenly communities here on earth in anticipation of the world's end. They believed, as it stated in the Pauline letters, that it was their job to create heaven here on earth, to act as if it already existed, so when the end times came, they were ready for it. They were to make these communities holy now and not after death. Even today, that informs the theologies and philosophies of Unitarian Universalists. You may or may not believe in an afterlife. Anybody willing to share? Do you believe in an afterlife? Anyone willing to? Some of you may or may not. Yes, some yes. Okay. And some do not. But we all believe in the importance of doing good work in the here and now, in this life. For justice should not be deferred to heaven, to beyond. Justice is here and now. The phrase relationships trump theology comes from a sermon at our National Unitarian Universalist General Assembly in Rhode Island this past June. Next Sunday, the entirety of that sermon will be shown here, and you'll have an opportunity to listen to all the many things that were spoken in that sermon. But I want to expound on one simple concept from that sermon. One of our military chaplains, Reverend Rebecca Montgomery, shares in her sermon her experiences as a military chaplain in Afghanistan, often being the first woman soldier that people had seen, let alone the first woman mullah, as they like to call her, in that region, who often also drove the Humvee because she wasn't allowed to carry a weapon, so she would do the driving. So she shattered many illusions as a chaplain in the military in many different ways. At one point, she explains that one of the most important things that we as Unitarian Universalists bring to the table is the importance of relationship over belief, that we need not think alike to love alike. We as a religion encompass people of a wide array of theologies, philosophies, and ontologies. In fact, we somewhat rely on differences between individuals as one of our key values of life. As Reverend Judith Walker Riggs put it, how welcoming is your Unitarian Universalist Church if there is not something happening that you do not approve of? In other words, if you like everything going on, we're probably not being a good Unitarian Universalist Church because we're not diverse enough yet. That said, we are not called to be unkind or spiteful or highly critical. And that can be a difficult line to walk at times. To be highly disagreeing with someone and to be kind, I've certainly had those moments. I'm sure you have too. This brings us back to that language of covenant. As a covenantal faith, we rely on the agreements that we make amongst one another about how we will be as a community. Congregations and groups that fail to name these expectations often find themselves in heightened church conflict or discomfort when these expectations are not stated or even agreed upon. In some ways, this idea of being covenantal is radical now, even as it was 400 years ago. Why? Because that is not our society's norm, is it? How do we have norms in diverse communities that are not based on the cultural norms of the privileged community that has been always in charge? It's not an easy thing to do. Recently, we've seen this example in multiple spades. With the events in Ferguson, Missouri, Beaver Creek, Ohio, Sanford, Florida, Oakland, California, and on and on, we have had some really open and honest conversations about race. What is truly fascinating is the tendency for people from privileged communities, those who have the power, whether they want it or not, to deny the lived experiences of those who are marginalized. One woman shared her realization that once a friend questions whether her experience as an African-American woman is real or not, that she immediately moves them into the acquaintance category, whether they talk about it or not. How can she be friends with someone who does not trust her experience? Her experience of receiving tickets unfairly, of being followed in stores, or needing to pay attention to what clothes she wears so that she's not hassled. And unfortunately, this is all too common. I personally have experienced discrimination and distrust at the hands of police as a transgender person. I, like many gay, lesbian, transgender, and queer individuals, make decisions about my day based on whether I want to deal with discrimination or not. Planning when to drink water so that you do not need to go to a bathroom before you are actually near enough to one that is safe to use. Refusing to go out at certain times of day. Avoiding towns where cops are notoriously problematic, etc. If you've not had those experiences of needing to plan your life around the institutions that privilege you, it can be hard to hear someone share those experiences and hear them without trying to say, but, or, wait, did you think of this? To just sit and listen is one of the key skills of a covenantal faith,
to let people's truth be true without trying to fix it or make anybody feel better. That's not an easy one. And goodness knows our society fails at that one spectacularly. Perhaps these differences are most apparent when people come from other countries to interact in our systems of oppression. A Catholic priest friend of mine from Kenya once shared how angry and embarrassed he was of being pulled over in a predominantly white major Midwestern city when he was driving an older parishioner home. She was sick. She was in her 80s and really struggling and just did not feel comfortable driving home on the icy roads. And so she asked him if he would give her a ride home. They were stopped by an officer who repeatedly asked him whether this was his car. It was. What he was doing there on that street at that particular time. And he asked the woman over and over again if she was safe, if she needed help, if he was holding her against her will. Eventually, the officer let him go. But my friend commented that never in his life had he experienced such intense and frequent racism as he did in the United States. This is a Catholic priest. The truth is that our society does not do healthy relationship between our differences very well. This means that our tendency to focus on covenant and relationship is truly a revolutionary and prophetic act, and one that requires our vigilance and our patience and our practice. Practicing this prophetic witness begins with us here in the pews, begins with us in our relationships and our families and with our friends. The differences between another here are all so varied that it can be complicated to navigate how to be in relationship because we do not all speak the same cultural languages. Someone sneezes. What's the appropriate response? Gesundheit. What else?
Bless you.
Bless you. Any others? Yeah, I don't know. That's very, I'm not sure what I'll do with that. Okay. In Arizona and much of the Southwest, the majority of people say salute, no matter what country or culture they are from. Bless their heart in the South is an insult. Bless their heart in the East is an actual blessing. Here in the Midwest, it depends on who you're talking to. But let's take this up a notch for a moment. I'm going to ask you a series of questions based on Margaret Anderson's work, and she does consensus building training, and she has a you can't lose quiz that she gives, and we're just going to do three of the examples from her quiz. This is a forced choice exercise, which I know Unitarian Universalists love. The thing is to pick the one you think is the right and normal one, and if you're the kind of person who really struggles with that right and normal, what is most comfortable for you? What is familiar to you? Okay? So this is the first one. Two examples. You decide which one is normal or sounds better to you. Would you make 10 copies of this? Could you make 10 copies of this? Just pick one. I'll say it again. Would you make 10 copies of this? Could you make 10 copies of this? You got it? Part two. A man and yourself are assigned to work on a project in two parts. You would really like to work on part one. When you meet with him, he says, I want to work on part one, so you take part two. You say, one of three responses, A, hey, you're not my boss. You know who you are. No, I want to do part one. Or three, I'd sort of like to do part one. Read that one more time. Pick the one that's most comfortable to you. A man and yourself are assigned to work on a project in two parts. You would really like to work on part one. When you meet with him, he says, I want to work on part one. So you take part two. You say either A, hey, you're not my boss. B, no, I want to do part one. Or C, I'd sort of like to do part one. Pick the one that's most comfortable and the most honest, okay? I know there's probably one you wish you did. That's not the one to pick. The one you would actually do. And question three. You're eating dinner with your friend Roger. The butter is on the table next to you, but too far for Roger to reach. He says, "Would you like some butter?" Do you A, say yes, thank you, and take some butter? B, say no, thank you, and continue eating? Or C, pass the butter to Roger saying, "Please help yourself." And again, pick the one you know you would actually do. You're eating dinner with your friend Roger. The butter is on the table next to you, but too far for Roger to reach. He says, "Would you like some butter?" Do you A, say yes, thank you, and take some butter? B, say no, thank you, and continue eating? Or C, pass the butter to Roger saying, "Please help yourself." You got it? Going back to the first question, you walk into the fellowship's office and someone asks, either A, would you make 10 copies of this? Or B, could you make 10 copies of this? How many would prefer A? Raise your hand. And how many would prefer B? It's about half and half, right? I apologize. The first two times I read it exactly the same, that third time I did it differently. I apologize.
The first, the way you said it the first time was, would you like to make 10 copies?
Ah, okay. It's actually, would you make 10 copies of this or could you make 10 copies of this? The point being, some people will hear, "Would you make 10 copies of this?" as a command and not a request. How many people might think that's a command and not a request? Could you make 10 copies of this could be perceived as being polite. It also could be perceived as you're not capable, or they're not sure if you're capable. How many of you might think that? All right.
I thought the first time I heard it, and the second time I heard it, I thought, could as in, do you have the time to make the
time? Right. Uh-huh. And different parts of the country, there's different norms. If I said, would you make 10 copies of this in Alabama, I would have been presumed rude. I do the same thing in Arizona, that would have been the preferred, saying could you would have been presuming ability. Just depends on where you live, depends on how you grew up, right? Okay. A man and yourself are assigned to work on a project in two parts. You would really like to work on part one, and when you meet him, I want to work on part one, so you take part two. You say, how many of you would say, A, hey, you're not my boss? Is Sandra in here? I'm like, where's Sandra? No? Curious. Okay, Lane is very clear. All right. B, no, I want to do part one. How many would say that? Mm-hmm. How many of you would say, I'd sort of like to do part one? Okay, the majority. Very Midwestern, by the way. The East Coast, C, would totally fail. Yeah. Okay. But again, you'll notice different answers and different preferences. And that's the thing to notice, is even in this community, these little things, we have different ways of perceiving the words. So when it comes to massive cultural differences, how hard is it to navigate being in a healthy, confident relationship? The final one. You're eating dinner with your friend Roger. The butter is on the table next to you, but too far for Roger to reach. He says, would you like some butter? How many of you said, A, yes, thank you, and took some butter? Being honest, I would have done that. Okay. B, no, thank you, and continue eating. And C, pass the butter to Roger saying, please help yourself. Okay. A and C. How would that sound? Yes, thank you. Would you like some? Yeah. Okay. Interestingly, if you say anything other than C in Alabama, ooh, height of rudeness. In fact, when I asked the first two, the congregation laughed, and we didn't even really get past the question, right? You know, because if somebody asks that, it's assumed that they're asking for butter. Whereas where I grew up, if you didn't ask, you know, say, please pass me the butter, you weren't getting it. Okay. So we have all kinds of differences in our communities based on the family we were raised in, the cultures we grew up in, and we have different ways of perceiving words and how we understand them, and that's when we all speak English. Right? So today, and in the next few weeks, our children and youth will be creating covenants in their classrooms. So often our children lead the way for our faith. And so often they have to teach their teachers that covenants are not rules. They are promises. You notice that the language, they are promises. The word covenant is based on a legal concept. When you make a covenant, it's assumed that you're making a legal promise to a person. How many people have had that understanding of the word covenant? It's a legal promise. I'm sure some of our lawyers have. Okay. You notice, though, that the language as we use it in our church is not law-based. It's promise-based. It is a statement of how we're going to be together, how we want the church to be together. Covenants are active. They're short. They're easy to understand. And when they are at their best, everyone knows what it is. For Unitarian Universalists, here are some basic assumptions we have about covenants. First, it is created jointly by the community that agrees to follow them, or at least everybody that can show up on that day. It is reviewed regularly to make sure that it is still current. For example, one of the seminaries in the United States found that they had a covenant for their community, and as they had an increasing number of African Americans, they realized they had to change the language, because being kind and respectful was perceived as being calm and patient. And in African-American communities, being loud and whatever is normal, is how you communicate. It is being kind. To many of their white compatriots, it was perceived as being angry, which they were not. They were just being loud and rambunctious and not angry at all. So they had to change the covenant to meet the needs of the community. The most important thing to know about a covenant is it will be broken. You will break it. I will break it. We will break it. Covenants are meant to be broken, not because we are willfully trying to get out. Let me see what most creative way I can not use an I statement today. It's about trying to be in a healthy relationship and knowing we struggle because we're human. And when the covenant is broken, that the response is not punitive, that instead it's about reconciliation. So if I say something that is hurtful to Lane, Lane and I will sit down and have a conversation. And if it's something that requires my apology, great. And if Lane feels like there needs to be something more done, we'll work on that. But it's reconciling, not somebody coming in and saying, you have to leave the church for 2 weeks because you were mean. You know, we're not going to do that. I want to close with that last concept. And Lane, thank you for letting me pick on you. Covenants are not hard rules that require some form of retribution and atonement. That is one of the many ways in which Unitarian Universalism is unique. We aren't about judging or damning or putting up walls, at least last I checked. Anybody pro-damning? No? Okay. We are about setting healthy boundaries. What might this look like? There was a congregation that had a covenant in place, as well as a right relationship team that helped members and friends and staff to respond to particularly difficult breaches of the covenant. A man had slapped a woman on the bottom. As you might imagine, the woman was highly offended. The man, and this was about 10 years ago, was in his 80s and grew up in a world where hitting someone on the ass was a compliment, at least in his mind. And the man refused to apologize, thinking that what he had done was not so egregious. As you might imagine, things escalated. Now, in a punitive system, there might have been a hard rule that said, you can't come back, or you have to do certain things before you can come back, and no conversation had. In a reconciling system, the parties are encouraged to speak with each other, to set agreements about how they will be in the future, and to set boundaries. In this instance, conversations were had between the relevant parties. The man agreed to apologize. He also understood that future actions like this would result in him being asked to leave the community for a period of time. One interesting thing about covenants is that there is an avenue for asking people to leave the church for a while and always an avenue for return. We do not excommunicate people, but we also don't let people hang out and just be mean. That's not okay. I think sometimes we make the mistake that we think being welcoming means we're going to put up with anything, and that's not healthy. We set boundaries, and we say no when we need to say no, and we say yes when we can say yes. So, for example, a person might be asked to take a class on anger management or preventing sexual harassment, having an accountability partner once they return, or simply refraining from having a similar breach in the future. There are many ways in which we can reconcile and heal those things where people feel assured. In other words, actions have consequences, right? We are about relationship with and among and not power over. The promises we make to each other are mutual, and those who chose to come into this community would have to agree to those promises in order to stay. It is an active and a dynamic system that models our greater, for our greater society, how to be imperfect and whole all at once. How would things have been done differently in Ferguson if this had been the model? How did First Unitarian Universalist New Orleans benefit from the awareness of such practices? Relationship trumps theology. This is a call for us to be in healthy relationship, especially when it isn't easy. When we are faced with a protester telling us we are going to hell in our pews, when we say something or do something racist or classist or homophobic or ageist, whether we meant to or not, and we all have and will. What we are called to is to foster healthy relationship with healthy boundaries. And it is a lifelong process. There is not some check-it-off list goal involved at the end. I'm sorry to my J's and my A-types, there is not some checklist for achievement. Relationship trumps theology. This is a call to celebrate difference and diversity, to embrace beauty and struggle of a world where we cannot even agree on how to ask for the butter. It is a call to strive for a healthy world transformed by our care. A call to build bridges and live into love and grace. And so I close by reading again the words from Alice Blair Wesley. But if one does not speak of the covenant that constitutes the community as a church, the promise that all are cordially invited to enter, then what does one say is the basis for the liberal church? Long experience teaches us that it cannot be a creed. I hope the day comes when many can explain ours is a covenantal church. We join by promising one another that we will be a beloved community, meeting together often to find the ways of love as best we can see to do. We have found there is always more to learn about how love really works and could work in our lives and in the world. May it be so. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow, and if you're the kind of person who needs to wiggle, wiggle. I know you know this hymn, so please join us in singing hymn number 1008, When Our Heart is in a Holy Place. Thank you. invite you to turn and face your neighbors across the chandelier. I've been mainly in churches where there's an aisle right in front of me, so across the chandelier will work. This is your sacred community. Smile and wave at each other, even you introverty types. Hi, everybody. This is your most holy and sacred community. This is where you come to practice what it means to be human. This is where we get to say yes to life. This is where we get to fall flat on our faces and know that the people here will be for us. Know you are not alone, and share your wisdom and knowledge of this community and our good news with the world, because God knows, the universe knows, cosmos knows, Neil deGrasse Tyson knows, we need each other. May it be so. Go in peace. Blessed be.